Hey, how you doing, man?
Oh, I tell you what, everything that has an asshole today has tried to take a shit on me.
Oh, really?
It has been one of those days.
Ah, that sounds fun. Well, it's bad enough with the quarantine, right?
Right.
With everything going on with that shit. So, what are you working on right now?
I got a lot of you know me, I've always got fingers in the pie. Multiple pies.
Cherry pies?
Not enough of those, but see what you get. Man, this, CT's gonna drop next Tuesday. And it really started just... I recorded a song for the Edgar Allan Poe Fest International that's in Baltimore every fall.
Yeah.
And found out late last year that they have something called the Saturday Visitor Awards, where they encourage artists and musicians and whatnot to submit works based on Poe's works. So I thought, hey, I can get in on that. So I started working on an adaptation of The Conqueror Worm. It was had this very medieval sound and a harpsichord going on in it, and it really wasn't doing it for me. I let some people hear like a little snippet of it. I never even got around to doing the full song. I did like a one verse, one stanza, little snippet of it, and let some people hear it. People liked it. They said they liked the again that sort of medieval flair it had to it, but I don't know, it just wasn't doing it for me, so I kind of...
It wasn't resonating with you.
Yeah, I kind of let it drift to the wayside, and then the holidays came and went. We're into January, and submissions for this run from January 19, Poe's birthday, through, like, Memorial Day. So when January got here and the holidays were over, I thought, let me dive back into this.
Yeah.
And... So let me come up with some new music, try to get a different feel on this thing. So I started doodling around and came up with this riff, and this riff I really liked, but I thought this doesn't fit the whole Conqueror Worm vibe. So I started going through his poetry and found Dream Within a Dream.
Yeah.
And the riff that I had written and the parts I had put together, the words in that poem fitted perfectly, the pacing of it, everything just, it was really, they paired together really well. So I recorded that, we mastered it, and then I sent it off January 19th. Well, a day later, I get an email, and they said, and whatever you submit for this year had to have been published before the end of 2019.
Ah.
So you're not eligible this year, but please submit this next year. We love it. So...
Nice.
You know, a little bummed out, but I thought, you know, hey, just...
Hey, that you did something that impressed them.
Yeah, but then I thought, man, I don't want to sit on this song for a year and a half, because I didn't know what their protocol was, if it was something that could be released out to the public and then sent to them, but I thought, you know, they obviously don't have any issue with it being out there. I'm going to do it as a vinyl single. You know, I've got Godless coming out this year, so I thought later on in the year, I'll release this as a limited edition vinyl single.
Naturally so. I mean...
So for the B-side, I had a song that I wrote when I was 19. It was the first full song I ever wrote, and it ended up being on the first album I ever recorded back in 1988, but I never liked the way it recorded because it, for that time, it ended up being a power ballad.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So for years, I wanted to redo that song and release it proper, but I never had a vehicle with which to do it in, even when I started doing my solo stuff, because it's a breakup song. And I thought, a syrupy, corny breakup song is not going to fit alongside Jesus the Devil, the Deed, or Rot Gut, or... Backstabbed in Backwater, anything like that.
Yeah.
So this came along, and I thought, here's a way I can release this song. I always the times I play it live, I kind of fall back. I explain what the song is about so people aren't like, what the fuck is he singing about?
Yeah.
You know, I tell them, I say, these are the words of a heartbroken 19-year-old now coming from a middle-aged man who doesn't give a fuck. So I thought, there's my B-side. So I recorded that and got it all ready. Well, then this started happening with the coronavirus and everything. And rather than sit around over the last couple of weeks, I pulled out a couple songs that that I had written and demoed for Godless that I didn't use. I recorded those, again, just for shits and grins. Let's record these songs. And I did my first stint in Facebook jail, and as a goof, I did a parody on Folsom Prison Blues called Facebook Prison Blues.
I think that's brilliant wordplay. Definitely, it shows your humor. I love it.
And it sort of morphed, and I'm like, I've got something here if I want to do something with it. And then, you know, again, as this coronavirus thing really compounded and got bigger and bigger, I don't know what the status is with Godless right now. I know Argonautis says everything's on schedule, at least for digital releases. So we'd still be looking at a summer release, digital and physical later. But I said, people are hurting right now. People are stuck at home. They want music. They want movies. You know, they want anything that can fill their day and distract them. Fuck it. I'm going to put this out as an EP. Argonautis was fine with it, you know, doing a DIY thing on Bandcamp. So it's going to come out next Tuesday.
Nice.
It's centered around the Bo piece, but it's got the other stuff too. And it's very, very different from any of my other solo stuff. It doesn't have, it's not, I always say my stuff was kind of swampy and bluesy and, and this doesn't have that swampy feel to it.
I was going to mention that because I just listened to it today, actually, a bit. And it's got its own feel in your repertoire. Being a fan of your work and your past works and stuff.
And the two songs that are on it that I wrote and recorded for Rotgut, or not for Rotgut, for Godless, that's why they didn't end up on Godless. I thought these are good songs, but they don't fit the vibe. So you kind of, you go with what works best together, and the other sort of backburners it. So they fit well on this because if anything on this sticks out without really fitting in, it's Facebook Prison Blues, but that's done as a goof anyway.
Well, yeah.
And I just consider that kind of a bonus track. You know, it's at the end, so.
Yeah, it's fun. It is what it's that hidden little Easter egg there.
Right, right.
So, but the funny thing is, you talk about this as just a DIY thing, but it really is a good EP, man. Like, it's definitely you know, like you said, it's different than your other stuff, but I like that. And Dream Within a Dream, I have to say, still has that windy kind of medieval vibe to a degree.
Mm-hmm. Which got, you know, sounds corny, but it has that dreamlike quality to it. It sort of has that ethereal feel to it. And when I started noodling music and came up with that, and started flipping through poems and seeing Dream Within a Dream, I'm like, ooh, just title alone, that really, and then to start reading it and fitting it with the music, it really worked out, probably a lot better than it should have. I got lucky on that one. yeah, this, even though it came together really quick, it wasn't thrown together because, at the Altar of Venus, and arm in arm with the Angels of Madness were both pre-written. You know, they were both demoed for Godless, so they existed. It was just a matter of recording them for real. Facebook Prison Blues came together in an evening because it was just a quickie.
No, but which one's the one that you wrote that's the breakup song?
That's Thunder and Gray Skies.
I fucking love that one, though. It doesn't sound like a typical corny love song to me.
Yeah, that I wrote that in spring of 1987, and It was the first of my own songs that I ever heard on the radio, and it was the first full song I'd ever written. I was a lyricist, and that one I actually sat down with the guitar and wrote everything. And, you know, even though it's a cheesy 80s breakup song, you know, just those
maybe
two
it's because
facts
I didn't
about
hear the
it,
original version first, but I don't see anything cheesy about the way you wrote that song.
I never liked the power ballad. It was intended to be just guitar and voice, kind of. And that's actually what I intended with this, but then it kind of, you know, I put some strings in it, put some harp in it, you know, just to thicken it up a little bit.
I like that you did that, though. You did that tastefully. You didn't
oversaturize
it, though, either.
Right, right.
Sometimes what you don't put is just as important as what you play.
Mm-hmm. With the original version, you know, it had the big power chords, and it had keyboards, and a big guitar solo, and, you know, for what it was in 1988, you know, it worked. You know, it worked great. People loved it. And but I never liked that form of it. And for years, said I want to re-record that someday. But
and you finally
I didn't want to just record it and have it, because then I would have been tempted to shoehorn it in where it didn't belong. So I just kind of sat on it. I did do a demo of it a few years ago. But I didn't want to record it for real and then put it where it would have really stuck out and not been in the right place. But,
yeah.
You know, with this, I was kind of as excited about that as I was with Dream Within a Dream, because it's like I finally have a viable place now to release this song, you know, just for my own amusement and just, you know.
Yeah.
Strictly for personal reasons.
Oh, yeah. You have a right to do that. I mean, I completely get that. If I put something out that didn't come out the way I wanted it to come out the first time, then I would be hell-bent on wanting to making it right.
Well, the reason I got recorded the first time was I rejoined a band that I had been in previously, and they recorded an album, and I came in, rejoined them to play on the record, to do some vocals and everything. They were one song short, needed one more song to fill up the album, and finally I said, I have a song, and presented it, and it made it on the album. If there had been another song, it probably wouldn't have gone on the album at all. It was just kind of out of necessity,
yeah.
And then it kind of became the big song on that album.
Crazy how that works, huh?
Right. But I tell you what, it's hard to sit down and record a song that has been in your head for 30 years. I must have done four different versions of the vocals, because I would hear them and they were spot on, you know, pitch wise, and I'm just like, no, I don't like the inflection, or I don't like this, or I don't like that, or and even the one that's on there that I finally settled on, it was kind of that I settled on. I'm like, okay, I think this is as close as it's going to get, because for 30 years I've had an idea in my head of what it was going to be like or what it should be like.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you can always capture that. So
no.
I came as,
sometimes
came as close
it,
as I
it,
could,
you
I think.
Don't want to get the Axl Rose syndrome with Chinese Democracy, you know, where you just have this mythic perfection in your head. But you wait so long and try to achieve that it's like damn near impossible.
Right, right.
That's, you know, that's what I mean by that. Like, you don't want to overthink it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's hard not to, because it's your art and your creative force and, you know. So
yeah,
don't
biggest,
think too much, but make it perfect.
The biggest change with the song is I changed the key on it. When it was originally recorded, it was in A minor, and I bumped it up to B minor.
Nice.
It just it flowed better that way. It matched my my current vocal range better. You know, I think it's funny, a lot of guys, you know, they re-record songs years later, and the key goes down with me, the key goes up.
The older you get, the higher notes you reach.
I don't know.
Oh boy.
I sing it a little different this way too, you know, with the power ballad version of it. There was more of a building it out, where this version, it's a little more subdued, a little more
subtle,
introspective. It suits the subject better.
Yeah, it's weird how it's one of those things where when you strip it down the way you have, the real weight of the song kind of hits you in the face like a fucking brick.
Uh-huh. Right.
You know, and who is playing the, on the EP, is that your son playing the, extra instruments? Like, there's a harmonica that I heard for the first time you use?
Yeah, no, actually, I played everything on this. I did all the string arrangements, I did the harmonica, I did percussion. I did drop Rob into the mix because it occurred to me this is the first solo thing I've done that he's not been on.
Yeah.
I'll get accused of nepotism, I'm sure, but when we were recording Godless last summer, I got some recordings of him laughing and stuff to throw into spots for effect. So when you're listening to the Facebook Prison Blues, and it might not be on the version you have, because I did make this change just a couple days ago, during the part where the kazoo soloist is getting scolded,
yeah,
I dropped some of that laughter from Rob behind it.
Nice.
So that might not be on the version you have, but that way I got him on it, so he's listed as a special guest. But being confined and not able to see anybody, I played everything on this.
Yeah, the instrumental track Isolation I thought was a nice touch too.
That one came out of nowhere because
as a guitar player who does that myself, I have to bring that up and respect that.
And as I'm putting this together and arranging it for vinyl release, I had about a minute and a half free space on one side. And Doug, my engineer, Doug Benson at Commodore Recording Studio, who does all my mastering, he started chastising me. You've got to get creative. You've got a minute and a half to play with. So I said, well, fuck it then. I'll write an instrumental. And that's definitely not my forte. I'm a singer. So anything that I write, any music I write is written with lyrics and voice in mind. But I sat down and started noodling and started making these, you know, started forming just weird-ass chords.
What is that like, though? Because I'm a guitar player who's not a singer, so I'm the opposite.
Right.
I mean, I try to, and I'm a songwriter and stuff. I get that, and I sing because I have to. But when it comes down to it, I'm more of a guitar player first. So what was it like to take a step back and focus on what you were playing rather than trying to find a melody to sing to it, or you know what I mean?
I kind of, because there is an instrumental on Rotgut that was very old. It was a piece, or it was based off of a piece that I wrote when I was in college. I was a media communications major and had a film class.
Gotcha.
And I wrote a score for my film that was this little guitar part. And it sat in my head, and when I was putting Rotgut together, I said, oh, I should break this out. And I fleshed it out and added a couple more parts to it. And it became the instrumental that's on Rotgut. So I kind of stepped back into that, although this was from the ground up. I wasn't building on something that was already written.
Yeah.
But it was just like, let's find the bass. Let's find the main part of the piece, and then build something off of that that can then come back around. And the fact that it's only a minute and 20 seconds or whatever it is, there didn't have to be a whole lot to it. So that was helpful. I just wanted, you know, when I thought, okay, I'm going to write an instrumental, what's it going to be about? I thought, what's on everybody's mind right now? Being isolated. So I said, I need something creepy.
Something despondent, something eerie.
And then I threw in the the sound effects, and I sequenced. I found a really cool. I was going to break the bass out and put a bass track on it, but then I found this really cool Bode upright bass sample and put that together to put behind it. I think nice. That adds a whole lot to it, having that sort of a bass tone.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed, that's like Arm in Arm and the Angels of Madness, Arm in Arm with the Angels of Madness. That's not a real bass track. It's a keyboard track, you know, that's doing that that bouncy root fifth underneath. I just thought, again, I was going to get the bass out, but I started playing around with that, and I'm like, this really works for this piece. So it's about what works for each song.
Yeah, it's, and, you know, having experience recording, you know, I'm not finished with it, but having an EP of my own that I've worked on and had it in my head and literally hear it build from nothing and everything, it's one of the most gratifying things to be able to do that.
Right.
You know, and I had access to all kinds of, you know, just being able to, and that, like you said, you know, getting lambasted or chastised to come up with something. You know, I notice, for me, that happens a lot on its own. You know, and I don't, like I said, it's fascinating to me that, like, you did an instrumental track and you consider yourself a singer. I've done shit like that, but I'm a guitar player.
Right, right.
I can write lyrics and shit like that, but, like, you know, I'm a musician first, so, like, did you find yourself thinking of, like, different scenarios in your head as you were coming up with it, or were you just trying to find a vibe?
I was just trying to find a vibe, and I found the chord that I wanted.
So it inspired itself, kind of.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, and I kind of, anything creative that I do, kind of, once that first idea sort of takes root, it just grows from there. And again, you know, I found that main part that the piece starts and ends with, and then just filled in the middle.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I wrote, that's how the parts with Dream Within a Dream happened, too.
Yeah, sometimes, like, you could just pick up the guitar, and out of nowhere comes something. You're like, I need to record this.
Right.
I've actually told my missus to do that a couple times. Before all this shit started happening, I was jamming over at a friend's on St. Patty's Day. Corned beef and alcohol, just like you should. And I started playing something because I was playing through an amp, and I don't have an amp right now. So, like, getting to play through an amp for the first time in a couple of months was like, yes! But I started playing something, and I was like, babe, you need to record this because I'm not going to remember this for shit.
That's what I did, because I was actually working while I wrote it. I had my little, it's a little three-quarter-sized Yamaha that I could sit here. It's got nylon strings on it that I could sit here, and it's not too cumbersome to bang around on while working. And once I got the pieces put together and got what the arrangement was going to be, I just recorded it in my laptop, and it sounded like shit.
Oh, yeah. But
it was a good reference recording, so that once I was done working, I could go up and work on it for real. And I went upstairs, got everything set up, recorded it, and hated it. Said, oh my God, this just is not happening tonight.
Yeah.
And I deleted everything and put everything away and had dinner. And thought, this can just wait till tomorrow. And I sat there and I'm like, just, it was too burned into my head. I couldn't just let it go. And I got everything back out. And then everything. I think I just needed to eat.
Yeah, sometimes that is how it is.
Yeah, but then everything fell into place, and it ended up being what you heard.
From
what I say, yeah.
Well, I mean, they always say you gotta loosen up somehow, and I guess eating dinner is one way to do it.
Out again and tanked, then it probably would have been put off until the next day and then see what happens. But, nope, sometimes you just gotta walk away
let it simmer.
Yeah, and then everything fell into place.
Yeah. I find myself... What inspires you nowadays? Is there anything that really inspires you beyond like, your normal means? Could you hear something that's not even close to what you're doing and be like, huh? Because I do that sometimes.
I mean, just, you know, you hear something and, like, Ab Groon, the Spiral Grave song, that's all based off the quote about stare into the abyss long enough and the abyss stares back at you. And if you go back down, listen to that song and listen to the lyrics, you'll get that. You'll hear that sentiment coming out of it. So, I'll hear things or just hear a line or something like that. And sometimes it can just be just a completely incidental line, and I'm like, ooh, that's really good.
Yeah.
What can I build around that? And it might not even become, that line might not even be the prevalent theme in the song.
But it sparks that whole thing.
But it's like, yeah, there was an All in the Family junkie when I was a kid. Mike opens up a phone book to find a number for a lawyer, and he says to Archie, should we start at the beginning? He says, no, start in the middle and read out sideways. But that's kind of what happens. I'll get hear a line, and it'll kind of be in the middle, and things will grow from it in all directions. And it ends up just being a component in the song, but it's actually the piece that the entire song sprang from.
Yeah.
Every situation is a little bit different.
Oh yeah.
You know,
I've had instances.
You write words first, or you write music first, and some of one, some of the other.
Same for me. Although I find it harder to put words that I don't have music for to music. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, you know, people will always ask, "Where do you get titles from, or whatnot?" Go to the devil. When I was still writing that, I noticed I've got two devil songs here. I've got Bedevil Me, and I've got Jesus the Devil Need. Maybe something, because I didn't have a title for the album yet or anything. I thought maybe there needs to be a devil theme here. So, you know, the first thing I thought of is the devil, between the devil and the deep blue sea. But I'm like, that's too damn wordy.
Yeah.
And it's been used.
Sounds SpongeBobby.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to come up with a little catchphrase regarding the devil. So I did a Google search and got this whole big long list that I'm reading down through. And, you know, the devil's in the details. And
anybody listening to this interview will end up Googling this as well.
I thought the devil is in the details, and then I thought, nah, that sounds like, you know, an 80s glam album or something like that. And then I see Go to the Devil, and I'm like, ooh, that's it.
That's doomy.
And then I thought, well, now I need a song called Go to the Devil. So that's it all. That was all born out of necessity. I need a name for the album, and I want it to be something involving the devil.
Classic story.
Well, you know, Kiss calling Dr. Love. Gene got the idea for that. He was at a holiday.
Got the Howard.
Yes.
Yep.
Calling Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, Dr. Howard. You know, I love that kind of stuff to hear where inspirations. It's not always something profound. You know, there are songs like Ohio where you know what inspired that song.
Oh, yeah. The one school shooting the government doesn't want you to remember.
But there are some songs that there's not a profound. There's a dumbass, funny reason behind it. I love that. You know, everything doesn't have to draw from a major occurrence. It can be something that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's funny because that story of Nirvana and Smells Like Teen Spirit's a classic one. Well, where'd they get, how'd they come up with it? What does it mean? Someone wrote on Kurt's wall, Kurt smells like Teen Spirit, and he's like, smells like Teen Spirit. Okay. Most of their song titles, like their song Sliver, he titled it Sliver because he knew people would say it Silver. You know, just because.
Well, there's a line in The Worst and Longest Day, Iron Man. Yeah. I'm an old radio junkie, and I'm listening to an episode, I want to say it was of Suspense, and one of the characters says, "The depths of my malignancy," and I'm like, oh my God, that's beautiful.
That is.
And I just tucked it away. That was a case where I just tucked it away, and as I'm writing that lyric, I'm like, "The depths of my malignancy," bang, there it goes.
Yeah.
There's a line in A Horror Confession from that same album that says, "Torn away by dread and fear." That came from an old Peanuts comic strip. Snoopy's dancing around, you know, maniacally, and Lucy tells him, "How could you be so happy all the time with what's going on in the world? Be sensible, live in dread and fear." Said, "Live in dread and fear." Torn away by dread and fear. There it is. Again, just using words, you know, and I love that.
And I like how, like, you know, you show your sense of humor. Like, I think that's something I find that modern rock and modern metal bands try to, like, be too serious all the time. Like, mm-hmm. They all have Pantera syndrome.
Well, you can take something that comes from a sort of a comedic source, and you can put it into something to where it's not comedic. It has the dramatic effect. There's a song on Godless called "Here Under Protest," and there's a line in that that says, "The mother's crying, the children dying, the lost solution hangs in space so far away." And what inspired that last line there was A Christmas Story. when Ralphie's dad's in the basement just cursing the furnace, and Ralphie, you know, the voiceover says, "In the heat of battle, my father wove a tapestry of obscenity that, as best we know, still hangs in space over Lake Michigan." So the lost solution hangs in space. That's so it's like, wow, that's a great line. Well, it came from I'm revealing myself as a hack.
Who doesn't know how to tune his own guitar?
that guy surfaced again today, buddy of mine. Posted on my wall, due to coronavirus, nobody will be going to the Calhoun Mangold shows just like before.
He's about as bad as that Clint Bead motherfucker.
Not something that makes me happy, but, you know, my dad always used to say when he was alive, he said, "Man, if somebody's worrying me, they're leaving some other poor bastard alone." And that kind of stuck. You know, there are people. An old roommate of mine, when South of the Earth came out, you know, overall, that album was revered and loved, but there's some people out there that don't like it. Make comments on YouTube and whatnot. My roommate's like, "How can you just sit there and read that and not be angry?" And I said, "If things like that are going to upset you, you don't belong in this business. You know, you're putting yourself out there to be ridiculed or, you know, that sort of thing. You know,
yeah.
If you're not willing to take that, don't do it."
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean,
and I don't even fall back on, you know, you'll see a lot of guys that'll fall back on, "Well, let's hear what you can do." And I don't even subscribe to that, you know.
No, not at all.
I can't install a window, but I can sure look at a window and tell you if whoever did install it did a shitty job of it.
Exactly.
So I don't even fall back. It's like, no matter who you are or how, what quality of stuff you do, there are going to be people who like you and there are going to be people who don't like you. And, you know, it's fine either way.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it is. Like Paul Stanley from Kiss used to say, "If you're with us, hey, that's awesome. If you're not with us, hey, that's cool. But if you're in the middle, get out."
Get out, yep.
You know?
I enjoy what I do. I have fun doing it. My son likes it.
Well, yeah, it's cool as shit. My kids love that I play guitar. They think I'm, like, you know, cool as shit. And it's like, you know, can't knock it.
Yeah. Anything that I do in the mindset of I want to do things that if somebody else was doing them, I'd want to check them out or would be interested in them.
Yeah, naturally.
You know, if I heard if somebody else had put out Rot Gut and I heard it, I'd have been like, hey, I like that. I'm going to pick it up. If someone else had written Jesus Devil Deed and I would have gotten wind of it, I want to read that, you know, just. And that's not blowing my own horn. That's just my interest. I write for me, and hopefully other folks will enjoy it as well.
And that's how any true artist does it, you know.
Right. And that's, you know, don't you wish you would have stumbled on this 30 years ago? It's like, well, you know, I might have had more commercial success with it. Who knows? But I enjoy the level that I do things now.
Whereas if you had gotten famous young, you could have probably not have what you have now. You know what I mean? Like, there's always that. Everybody's always like, well, one of my exes used to always say, well, I don't believe that anybody who plays guitar or anything doesn't want to be famous. That just sounds stupid to me. I'm like, no, that's not true. You think I want to become famous? She's like, yeah. I'm like, you're fucking crazy.
My daughter said to me a few years ago, she says, how does one become famous? I want to become famous. I said, Nadia, don't strive to be famous. Strive to be successful. I said, there are a shit ton of people out there who are famous who haven't done a damn thing, who don't have any skills. They're just famous for being famous. And, you know, I started mentioning the Kardashians and Paris Hilton, people like that. And she's like, wow, you're right. So I never thought of it that way. I'm like, well, you're a dumb kid.
Yeah.
But, you know, we talk about actors and stuff. And I think if I were an actor, a film actor, the type of actor I would want to be or the type of success I'd want to have are those guys that you see in movies all the time, but you don't know what their name is.
Yes.
And Hugo Weaving was one of those guys.
Yes,
you know?
He was.
We finally had to look his name up. This was years ago. You know, that dude from The Matrix and Lord of the Rings. Will Patton's another one. Will Patton was in Remember the Titans. He was in the Thomas Jane Punisher, among other things. But just those kind of guys that if you'd see him on the street, you'd be like, it's that dude from that movie. But, you know, not a household name. You know,
yeah, not like John, Paul, George, and Ringo.
Right. These are guys who are constantly, just face it, if you're seeing this guy in all these movies, he's working, he or she. They're working. They're constantly working. They're these character actors that are constantly getting work. Yeah, they're not making millions of dollars per film, but they're successful. That's what I mean. Strive to be successful.
Yeah. I always told, don't strive to be happy, strive to be content.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I have, you know, I'm busting my hump 9 to 5 every day, well, 9:30 to 6. but I get to do this, you know. I get to go on road trips now and then. I got to go to Europe a couple years ago, so.
Which is on my bucket list, so I mean, you know. Dude, you get to do things that not everyone gets to do, and you get to kind of be like a modern version of a shaman, basically.
Right, right. I mean, it's, you know, I enjoy doing things at the level that I do them at. I'm perfectly content with that.
And, I mean, I wouldn't see why not. I mean, Spiral Grave alone is fucking phenomenal, and that's something that, you know, you didn't expect to happen. You guys have released a couple of new tracks, I've noticed.
Yeah, because, you know, with everything that's going on right now.
Were they already recorded, or have you guys been demoing them?
Yeah, no, they were already recorded. And we have a few more things that we still need to record. You want to keep your name out there. While this is going on, we're scattered so far away from one another that getting together to do, you know, that everybody's doing right now, just because it is a way to.
Yeah, I hosted everybody. A watch party on my blog page just to do something, and I might do something like that then, but really all I can do is what I've been doing. Unfortunately, that means that, well, the Obsessed show up next month on the 4th has been canceled, and they don't have a rescheduled date for that yet. And I messaged the venue that I'm supposed to go see Uncle Acid at in May, and they said they will be postponing it a couple months. But nothing's definite on either one, and I don't dig that.
Yeah, I mean, I feel so bad for people who... I'm lucky, you know, I can't issue any complaints at all. Yeah, it sucks to be stuck in the house all the time. But I'm still working, you know, my job hasn't been impacted. My job has actually gotten easier because now I'm teleworking instead of commuting 3 days a week and teleworking two. I'm teleworking 5 days a week. I'm not dependent upon, you know, the music and going out and playing. So there are a lot of people hurting, and I can't sit and complain one bit about my status in it when there are so many people, you know, in and out of music who are just really hurting right now. I did a live stream last weekend, and I said, we've really, two things that have happened. We have gained a real appreciation for the truck drivers and the stock boys and cleaning crews. I said, we've gotten a real appreciation for them. They're not just menial shit jobs, you know?
Yeah, like, I just applied for a factory over across the street that's essential because they, pack and pick and stuff for medical supplies to be shipped out to stores and shit. And
you know, and we've also been reminded of how important the arts are.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
I mean,
you know, you see all these people yelling at celebrities because of their political views, you know, yelling at them on both sides, you know, fuck Hollywood, da 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 da. But, and these people are eating the movies up right now for lack of anything else. So the arts, again, we're reminded that just how important the arts are. And,
absolutely.
Know, what a
lifeline
they could be.
Anybody who says that, you know, art, this or that, blah, 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 should have to live without art then, in my opinion, if you could make it that way, you know.
You know, again, I'm lucky, you know, there are so many bands out there, mine included, who haven't been able to get together and rehearse and who are in limbo and just miss, you know, getting together and, you know, throwing down.
When this first started happening, I was saying to a friend, I said, dude, this is gonna fuck the music industry right now in the ass, from the people who work at venues to the people like me.
Right.
You know, all of us are going to be hugely affected by this.
What I'm hoping, and I've talked to my son about this, about things across the board, but speaking strictly for arts and music now, I'm hoping this has the effect on people to where when it comes back, they're like, holy shit, I never realized how vital it was for me to go to shows, how vital it was to my happiness and my well-being, and it sort of reinvigorates the scene, you know, to where people are going out more, you know, and I know.
And you mean more the people who aren't like me or like, you know, because I had a gig lined up each month out until about June.
Right.
I was going to go see King Buzzo do an acoustic set in Buffalo from the Melvins. And that would have been the tits.
A new vitality within the smaller scene where people realize, wow, I really fucking missed this when it was taken away from me.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out and enjoy it.
Yeah, like, definitely. That was my thing. And that's the only thing that we can look forward to. It's this limbo fucking period.
Right.
You know, and
uncertainty, you know, just, and, you know, then there's worries beyond that, you know, just, yeah, we talk about worrying about if Maryland Doom Fest is going to be canceled or postponed, and that would suck, but, you know, we're worried about our buds and our, you know, our friends and our families and just anybody, you know, this is some real heavy-duty bullshit,
Yeah, and whether or not there are conspiracies about it or not shouldn't matter. If it gets to that point where Gene Simmons and Kiss are turning down money,
right,
you know it's something serious, and it should be treated as such.
Right.
But also, don't be an ignorant sheep and think everything's fine. Keep
right.
a close watch on your government, mind you, but, I mean,
yes.
not, I don't, everybody being all racist towards Chinese people, like, are you fucking serious? Come on.
Right.
It's because it came from China, I mean.
I know, we could sit here another hour and talk about that. And
yeah.
shit out of everybody.
But it's just fucking crazy the world we live in, and I hope something good comes out of this. That's the only thing
right.
that I, you know, because, you know, and especially with the live music, like, I know that, you know, the musicians and stuff won't go away, and I won't necessarily go away through this, but, like, it'll be harder for us, too, once everything comes back, to do everything. I worry, you know, because, like, you'll have to lay people off at venues and stuff and everything, and you know what I mean?
Right. Well, there will be venues who won't recover. You know, we've already seen, just here in my area, we've seen venues close over the last year, and there will be some venues that won't survive, either because they will just literally have the stake put in their heart, and there'll be some others that the owners will just throw in the towel and say, you know what, I've had enough. And so it's definitely going to have that kind of an impact.
Yeah. I'm just trying to help do my part as the artists are, because, you know, I take a completely different approach to journalism, I guess, than most rock journalists would, but I enjoy what I do, and I take it seriously, and I love what I do, so there ain't nothing gonna stop me completely from doing it, but,
right.
you know, I just, you know, I'm hoping that the shows that I paid tickets for are gonna come back. I had press passes for them, too.
Mm-hmm.
See, I bought the tickets, and I got press. You see, that's a big difference. I didn't just ask to be on the guest list. You know.
Yeah, I never go that route.
I only ask if money's tight, and money's been tight for me, but I was still, we didn't spend that much on these shows, you know. Three tickets for The Obsessed was like $60.
Yeah.
You know, that ain't shit.
You know, I don't even like, you know, dude, how much are your patches? Oh, just grab one. Man, how much are they? Because I don't want to take stuff for free, because I know, you know, I'm on the other end of that hook as well, and I know it's.
I had ordered an LP, like, a couple weeks before Corona hit, and it was from my buddy's band out in Iowa called the Surf Zombies, and I asked him if he could open the shrink wrap and him and the other guys sign it. He said, sure. And it got here as the outbreak was just starting to get serious. I told him, I said, man, I wish that I possibly could have waited a couple weeks to buy that, because now Bandcamp's waiving all their fees. You know?
Right.
Like, that's why, too, you know, why else would I be doing this right now? You know, I love the EP, and I really want to, you know, I want to do my part to help, you know, bring some attention to that, because, I mean, I know a lot of people who are interested in it just on the Edgar Allan Poe connection as well.
Right, right.
You know?
Thank you for that, definitely.
Yeah, I shared it on my page and stuff, and like I said, I'll accompany this with a review, you know, so I'll probably do that tomorrow, get everything, you know, but like, we just gotta all stick together and dig our heels in, you know, because this will have, I feel bad because, believe it or not, I'm still waiting on my taxes and stuff, so I can't monetarily support bands like I really planned on or want to.
Right, and that was one of the things I was going to reference talking about, that, you know, maybe once this has passed, people will be more, you know, vibrant about going out to shows. You know, you're still going to be limited by your schedules, by your other and more important obligations, you know, like if you have children or your job or whatever.
Yeah, but if people still find a way before it, they'll definitely find a way after it.
Yeah.
You know?
I know there will be some hellaciously good parties when all this
Fuck yeah. And you guys got to get your asses down to Rochester once this is all over so I can finally see and hang with you guys.
Yeah, I guess I haven't gotten official word or corresponded with anybody, but I'm guessing that, or pretty certain that April 11 in Buffalo is mixed for the moment.
Oh, probably, dude. I mean, April 4th is when I was supposed to see The Obsessed, and that got X'd.
Right, right.
So, I mean, and that's a bummer, man. That's the second time that I've been able to see him and everything. And everything's perfect, and then bam, that's the second time.
Right.
First time happened a couple years ago. And both times, my same buddy's band was playing. Joe. His band was supposed to open up for The Obsessed at this gig, and then a couple years ago, Saints and Winos were opening up for him in Rochester.
Right. Well, man plans, God laughs. That's never been truer than what we're seeing right now. So.
Yeah, I know. It's funny, too. You know what? The last show that I was able to go to with my other half who took photos for? Postmodern Jukebox on March 1st. The most unmetal, unrock thing you can imagine, but it's phenomenal. I love music, man. I love old school jazz and yeah.
The last what I consider big show I went to was Tom Jones a few years ago.
Yeah. Well, I went and saw like Pentagram last year, and like the shows that I got on the guest list, Bobby offered to put me on the guest list for that, so I accepted that, you know, honor. If he offered, you know what I mean?
Right.
Right. But, like, with, like, when I saw Kiss in Syracuse, I saw Blue Oyster Cult, I was on the guest list for that, you know what I mean? If it's a bigger show like that, then yeah, you know, you almost have to.
Right, that's what I was going to say, too. It's not cheap.
Well, I mean, like, you know, I still would have paid the money to see them, those bands. But it's just the fact that, like, as a professional, it helps. And with Kiss, I first was being considered, and then I was selected, you know, for the guest list and photo pass and everything. And to be selected by Kiss was a huge high.
Shit.
You know, like, well, with Uncivil Revolt, you know, it's editors out of Cali, so I mean, you have to understand on that level too, like, you know, they go, sometimes I'm covering the same tour, same band, but different show. They're just on that side of the country, I'm on the other.
Right.
So, given the rapport that the website and the name has as itself that we've all helped build, that carries clout and weight too, you know. But it was just really, it's one of those things where, especially if it's an underground show, like, I would have gladly paid to see Pentagram. I felt bad because I leaned over to my friend who I took with me, and I was like, you know, they didn't get paid that much tonight, right?
Right, right.
They put on a great fucking show, packed the place. I got to meet Bobby and got my album signed and, you know, had such a great time thanks to, you know, Bobby and Pentagram, and, you know, I'm like, they didn't make jack shit tonight. I hope you know. Yeah, I mean, I hope everybody can stick together. I mean, we've been through, I mean, hard rock and heavy metal's been through how many different things that almost killed it?
Right.
You know, it can't die. It's got a certain spirit to it that just, it won't. Like, when I saw Judas Priest, I was like, the dude's 70 years old, and it's like, apparently metal gods don't rust.
He's still killing it.
So is Ian Gillan from Deep Purple.
I mean, you know, you look at Halford 30 years ago, 40 years ago, and you think, well, he's lost a little bit. Yeah, he's lost a little bit, but he hasn't lost a whole lot.
I talked to a buddy of mine who does, like, a lot of theatrical performances and stuff with, like, big voices like that. And, you know, he's a Jamaican dude, and I was showing him Judas Priest because he's into theater and stuff. I said, listen to this guy's fucking voice. And every time he would hit a high note, this guy would smile. And I'd be like, every time he does that, you smile. He's like, well, yeah, because, like, people like him could just fucking do it. And people like me who would give their left nut to be able to do that can't.
Right.
But, like, I showed him, too, like, how, like, he sounded in the prime in the 80s. And then I showed him Free Will Burning from the show I was at. He said, so, yeah, he just went from, like, absolutely phenomenal, like, the best of the best, to, like, still fucking phenomenal. Uh-huh. Like, he didn't downgrade very much at all.
Right. He's still killing it. You know, when they came out on that last tour and did Saints in Hell, which they had never played before, and which is a very challenging song to sing, and here they come, never having played it, and they come out and do that. It's like, holy shit, this is how you do it.
Yeah, I mean, well, when I saw them, they pulled out, like, Delivering the Goods, and fucking, I was like, Free Will Burning? Holy fucking shit.
Right.
Desert Plains was a great touch. Like,
I
saw them on the first leg of the Firepower tour, I think, which was with Deep Purple, so the set list was different. When they started the second leg of the tour, they included a lot of different other rare nuggets. I was like, God damn it! But I liked the show that I saw because even though it had more of, like, I guess you would say the generic set list, even though it wasn't generic. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Right.
But
the standard cuts, but it's not the deep cuts either.
It had the standard cuts, but it had, like, you know, nuggets thrown in. Like, you know, I had never gotten to see them play Desert Plains, and I loved that. They pulled out Delivering the Goods. They pulled out Turbo Lover, which they usually play anyway, but, like, you know, Free Will Burning was a nice surprise. The new songs were fucking great, too. Like, he's just, I mean, especially Free Will Burning. That one's a mouthful.
Oh, my God, yeah. I know. I used to do that in the cover band, and I couldn't look at our guitar player because any time I would do that, your name has never been the way to keep her on the spree. I couldn't look at him because he'd be standing there mouthing the words real fast with a dumb look on his face. I'd look at him and start laughing, it was over.
Yeah.
That's always been one of their songs that, you know, you'd be sitting there with other singers and, yeah, well, I used to do this song. Yeah, well, I used to do this song. Yeah, well, I used to do this song. Yeah, I used to do Free Will Burning.
You
should, dude.
Yeah.
And that doesn't make me special. There's any number of singers out there who did Free Will Burning.
Because there's not many that can.
Goes to War, they do Painkiller, and he kills it, man. It's just so fucking cool to see them play that. You know?
Did you see that KK has his own version of Priest going, too?
I do, and I don't like the name of it. I think that's, come on. But, no, him and Les Binks and Tim Owens, oh, hell yeah. I can't.
If you read KK's book, you'd probably understand why he did that and why he does have a right to do that, though. Like,
you know, people bemoan it. But I look back to when Ozzy got booted from Sabbath. Yeah, it sucked, but look what we got out.
you know, got two great bands.
In 1881, we got, you know, Blizzard, Diary, Heaven and Hell, and Mob Rules, you know. So, you know, I always say in 1983, what a great time to be a fan of Sabbath-related stuff, because in 83, you got Born Again, you got Holy Diver, and you got Bark at the Moon. It's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I mean, quality, heavy records, you know.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, even, like, we both expressed love and respect and admiration for the Tony Martin era, too.
Right.
You know. But what's cool is, what's cool is, I'm friends with Al Atkins, too, on Facebook.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
He's a lovely bloke, isn't he? Like, he's such a, he's a nice guy. I bought a signed CD from him one time. And I asked him, I said, do you have any old promo posters that you could include and maybe send over with it and sign for me, like some old ones, a priest or whatever. He sent me an old promo pic from 73 of Priest, or 72, sorry, and signed it. So it's the old black and white, like you could tell. And he signed that. He included a little 5x10 of him on stage recently, and a poster from 2006, 2007, when he did the Blood Demons and Whiskey tour.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, man, thank you so much, you know?
He's a dude who could be so bitter.
He really could. He named the band.
Yeah, he could be so bitter, and not necessarily mad at anybody, but just mad at the world, you know, just, and he's not. And, you know, maybe at one time he was, but he embraces, you know, that he was part of that, and, you know, talks good about the guys and how happy he is. It's like,
KK didn't have anything bad to say about him either.
Right. Tony Martin has every bit of reverence for Ozzy and anybody who's been in and out of Sabbath. He knows what his place in Sabbath was, and sees no reason to, you know, take a piss on any of it. He's very just happy to have been there and respects it for all of its pieces and parts.
Yeah, and the cool thing is, because I'm not as close to Ripper, but I have talked to him a few times. He said when he got off the road he might be able to sign my Demolition CE booklet. Well, now I've lost the booklet, and he was just recording with KK in the studio I saw. But I remember seeing Al had posted that he went and saw KK's Priest with Ripper and stuff, and he had fun, and he got to hang out with them and stuff again. And they were all smiles, and I look in the comments, and Al said something like, it was lovely to see you all, I had a great time. And Ripper said, same here, man, maybe next time we'll get this thing one together.
Yeah,
and I'm like, now that would be fucking cool.
Oh, no shit.
You know, and Al's solo stuff stands up on its own, too.
Yes, oh yeah. I mean, he was a different type of singer than Rob is.
He's not all that much different, despite the range. He's got that lower end gruff, you know.
Right.
It kind of sounds darker. I think Priest would have sounded darker if, you know, they would have got signed with Al, which I don't know how all that would have translated in the 80s, though.
Right. It's kind of like where Iron Maiden went with from going from
Deano to Dickinson.
Bruce.
Yeah. Well, Deano is fantastic. There's no way that they could have became what they became without Bruce.
Both sides of the fence, and I don't sit on that fence. I like
the Blaze era, and a lot of people don't, but I was a kid then. I didn't even know, when I bought Brave New World on cassette, I didn't know, because the internet wasn't as big like it is now, back then. When I bought Brave New World brand new on cassette, okay, at the turn of the millennium and everything, I didn't even realize that Bruce had come back until I put that cassette in and listened.
Be honest, I liked what Bruce was doing solo just before then better than anything Iron Maiden has done since he came back. Accident of Birth and Chemical Wedding, just two mind-blowing late
Yeah, that's part of the reason why when Bruce came back, he said there's one stipulation to Steve, and Steve said, what's that? He said, if I come back, Adrian comes with me. And Steve said, that's fine, I always wanted the man to be a six-piece.
Yeah.
You know.
But definitely check those two records out.
Oh, they're great records. I've been listening.
Chemical Wedding is a little darker and sludgier.
Yeah.
The dynamic between those two records is kind of like the dynamic between the first two Halford records, Resurrection and Crucible.
Yeah.
It's sort of the same kind of dynamic, and I think Roy Z had a part in that.
Oh, yeah.
Those two records are just great.
I do have to say, though, if, you know, it's been a while, revisit Brave New World.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I saw that tour.
Okay.
And boy, you talk about a singer's wet dream. Maiden headline, Queensryche played before them, and Halford opened it.
Damn.
Yeah, Halford
I saw
was on Resurrection.
The first time,
was,
I think mine might top it, but I was in seventh grade, and my first time seeing them, it was 2003, so it was right before Dance of Death came out. So they actually played Wildest Dreams, which was a new song at the time.
Yeah, I saw them. It was either right before Dance of Death or on Dance of Death I saw them. That was the last time I saw Maiden around 2003, I guess.
That was when I saw them, too.
Okay.
But Motorhead came out first.
Yep. Right, and then Dio.
Correct.
Yep.
And Dio was doing Killing the Dragon at the time. So
right.
That was a hell of a fucking show too.
Oh hell yeah!
It was the first time I smelled pot too. My dad was like, "Hey, do you smell that? Yeah, it smells like cat pee." He's like, "That's pot." Like he had to point that out to me. I wouldn't have really noticed had he not pointed it out. Thanks,
right.
Dad. But no, you know. And then I saw them again in 2009 when they did the Somewhere Back in Time tour. So they had, like, the old 80s setup. They had pretty much the Power Slave era stage setup with the Somewhere in Time Eddie. And they played a lot of deep cuts. I actually started appreciating the Seventh Son record after seeing them play Moonchild. And hearing and seeing
the
Clairvoyant.
The first concert I ever went to was Iron Maiden on Power Slave.
Nice. But I didn't get a full appreciation of, like, Seventh Son until I saw them play songs like The Clairvoyant and... Because I had heard them do it live on the Fear of the Dark tour, but you can tell Bruce wasn't interested, so the performances weren't exactly top-notch. But, I mean, seeing it and being there for those songs, too, you know?
Right.
The other cool one that sticks out of my mind is... The next year I saw Poison open up for Kiss, but the special thing about that was it was raining during Kiss's set, and I have the Instant Live CD, and I said to my fiance, I said, you know, it's funny, some people can say that they've been kissed in the rain, but I can say I saw Kiss in the rain.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
hey, brother, I am going to jump. Hungry.
I got corned beef waiting for me too, so I'm hungry. But yeah, so it comes out March 31st, Dream Within a Dream, and
yep, March 31st. That's when it'll go live on Bandcamp. I'm gonna release the lyric video for Dream Within a Dream that day on my Screaming Mad D Facebook page and on YouTube. And,
I need one of those fucking pins.
Yes. Oh, you'll get one, definitely. I'll send you a care package.
Oh, you're too sweet.
Yeah.
No, you're full of hatred and fear.
That's right. Oh, my God.
But all right, brother, this has been great. I love this.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Oh, no problem, dude. And like I said, I love... what you did with the music and stuff, and I'll get a review with this and everything, so.
Good deal. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Not a problem, dude. Thank you for supplying us with music. That's worth a shit.
Oh. You're welcome.
Even though you can't tune your guitar.
Oh, yeah. That's part of my niche, you know?
Yeah. Can you play a D2 guitar and still sound good?
That's right.
Yeah. All right, brother. Will you take it easy? I'll go stuff my face as you do. Keep in touch, man.
Yes, indeed. You have a good evening, brother.
You too, brother.